hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order the Industrial Education, Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. This is, of course, being done under the rules of the House, so we're operating under a Zoom meeting. And with that, I will have Ms. Schaefel take the roll.
Pulaski.
Present.
Sandel.
Present.
Keel.
Present.
Spearman.
Present.
Blitz. Excused. Burkle.
Present.
Edelson.
Present.
Frazier.
Present.
Hamilton.
Present.
Ostergaard.
Present.
McDonald.
Present.
Sandsted.
Present.
Sundin.
Present.
Mr. Chair, a quorum is present.
Representative Sandel, do you have a motion for us?
I do, Mr. Chair. I move that the minutes of our last meeting be adopted as they appear.
Representative Sandel moves that the minutes of the last meeting be adopted. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. With that, members are going to move to the agenda. In your packet, you should have House File 38. House File 38 is a bill that we have used in almost identical form over the last few legislative sessions. This bill would put $30 million into the Disaster Assistance Contingency Account. Those of you who were with us last legislative session know that we did put money into that account in 2019 and 2020. The account was created under Chapter 12B. Chapter 12B came about as a result of a legislative auditor's report of 2012, and the legislative auditor told us that Chapter 12A was no longer sufficient in handling the disasters that Minnesota was now confronting, since the disasters were coming at us with such rapidity that no local unit of government could sustain handling the disaster. So Chapter 12A was created in 2007 and 2008. To handle a presidential declaration. Chapter 12B was then created in the 2014 session to handle a new type of disaster, a gubernatorial disaster. That disaster then declared by the governor would then access the disaster contingency account, and that account would facilitate giving aid to the areas hit by a disaster almost immediately. Prior to Chapter 12B, we would of course had to call a special session. And I think all of us know that there is nothing special about a special session, particularly the last seven. So we are now going to have a review of that. Director Kelly is here. Director Kelly, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and members. He's going to go through a number of things that are also in your packet.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Joe Kelly. I serve as the State Emergency Management Director with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you for your bill and your continued support and financial support of the Disaster Assistance Contingency Account. And Mr. Chair and members, thanks for the opportunity today to provide a little more background information on the account and its history, as well as the current status and the real quick review of the governor's budget recommendation for this account. And of course, I look forward to your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair, personally, for your role in passing Chapter 12, the provisions that established the contingency account, as well as Chapter 12B back in 2014. I can tell you, and you'll see from some of the historic data, that this account has served Minnesota communities very well over those 7 years as they have experienced the damage and financial hardships caused by disasters in Minnesota. So, Katie, if you'd hit the next slide, please. A little bit of the background, as introduced by Chair Pulaski, the account was established in Chapter 12. In the main chapter, the account was in 2014, and then the provisions of Chapter 12, which are to provide state disaster assistance absent federal aid. And what that means to me is when damage caused by an incident are bad enough that a community, local community needs help recovering from that, but it's not of enough damage that that the federal government, that FEMA is going to get involved. It's created for those situations, specifically Chapter 12B. The money that's appropriated into this account provide assistance, and that assistance is in the form of reimbursement for the costs that are incurred by local units of government, tribal nations, counties, cities, townships, and their departments. Provides assistance for uninsured damage to public infrastructure, as well as extraordinary public response costs. The money in the account is authorized to pay for one, the non-federal share, which we sometimes refer to as the state match, for presidential declarations. As members are probably well aware, when FEMA is authorized by the President of the United States to provide disaster assistance, the federal government reimburses at a 75% rate. And under Chapter 12A and 12B, the state government pays the 25% non-federal share for presidential declarations. As has already been discussed, when there's an event that does not qualify for FEMA but is otherwise eligible under the account, the Disaster Assistance Contingency Account, or DACA as it's sometimes referred to, reimburses eligible applicants for 75% of their expenses. I've used the word reimbursement a couple times, and that is important. It's an important financial management tool, control, if you will, that it is a reimbursement account. It's not a grant account that puts money out ahead of time. It's a grant that reimburses those qualifying applicants for their expenses that are eligible under the account. As the chair pointed out, since the account was established, the legislature has not had to meet in special session outside of session to appropriate funds.
Director Kelly?
Yes, sir.
Director Kelly, I'm going to stop you here and have you repeat the last bullet point again.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair. Since the account was established, the legislature has not had to meet in special session to appropriate.
Yeah. Okay, so Director Kelly, I often found it in class when I was teaching students that if we repeat something three times, they have a tendency to remember it. And this will be the third time, including my first time saying it. So I'm just doing that so members understand the importance of that. Continue, Director Kelly.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it is important. And it, you know, what that does is it allows us to very quickly administer disaster assistance without having to wait for the appropriation process. However, since the account was established, it has been, I think, a budget item almost every year, if not every year, in order to replenish the account. And we sort of look at this as a gas tank, metaphorically. We draw money out to reimburse and support your local communities. Sometimes there's a discussion about how big that gas tank should be, and we'll talk about that toward the end of this presentation. And the governor every year includes in his budget recommendation what he recommends to be transferred into the account. In the budget bills, the money says it is appropriated to or transferred to the Commissioner of Public Safety, but really that's money that is appropriated for providing aid, again, to Minnesota communities, counties, townships, cities, tribal nations, et cetera. The part about absent federal aid, Mr. Chair, and we have not had a chance to talk about this, as FEMA looks at its rules, because we talk about how this account, particularly the parts of Chapter 12B, fill in, if you will, or close that gap when FEMA is not involved. FEMA is looking at some and considering some changes to their programs, which would, in effect, raise the bar, if you will, raise the threshold for each state for when they qualify for federal disaster assistance. And I only say that to say that this account is very important now, and if the federal government follows through with raising the bar, the financial threshold, the provisions of Chapter B will be even more important to our local communities. Next slide, please, Katie. Just a real quick review of what has happened and the activity in this account during the 2021 biennium to date. It has supported two federal declarations that have impacted 138 counties. And I know we only have 87, but on this slide, we count a county every time it's included in a declaration, and 18 tribal nations. The first one, members will probably recall, the spring of 2019 was a horrible spring with everything from widespread spring snowmelt flooding to ice storms, snowstorms, blizzards, damaging winds that took down power lines, et cetera. That disaster, federal disaster, now accounts for more than $100 million of uninsured damage to about more than 50 counties, and I think it's four tribal nations. So one of the more significant natural disasters in Minnesota history, certainly above average by a fair amount. $25 million, if you do the simple math, $100 million worth of damage. $25 million of that reimbursement is programmed to come out of the contingency account, with FEMA providing the other. Of course, the other federal major disaster declaration that we are currently under is for the pandemic response. The national health emergency was originally declared retroactive back to January of 2020, and we received documents from Health and Human Services that the national health emergency will continue through the end of calendar year 2021. And over the top of that, the president has authorized disaster assistance for part of the costs associated with responding to the pandemic. Of course, there have been other pandemic relief support that came from the federal government, and that's why that plus to be determined is on there. To date, we have not spent any money out of the disaster assistance contingency account to support 87 counties and 11 tribal nations with their response to the pandemic, because that has been, those expenses to this point have been covered by coronavirus relief funds from the federal government, to include the non-federal share for reimbursement of local expenses. But even though the pandemic was raging and the top of everyone's mind, we still have had 20 qualifying state disaster declarations during this same time frame that have impacted 58 counties and two tribal governments, and totaling $33 million to date of eligible damages. And it runs the full range of Minnesota natural disasters, from floods, tornadoes, ice storms, heavy rain events with slope failures, even gale force winds, shore erosion damage up on Lake Superior. And we're already off to a start, as I mentioned in the conversation earlier, Mr. Chair, but for the members, we have our first request for state disaster assistance for calendar year 2021 relating to the blizzard that we had right before Christmas. There was about $450,000 worth of damage down in Faribault County to the rural electric co-op system that provides electric service to the citizens of that county. So we continue apace. I'll just call your attention, Mr. Chair and members, to the slide on the left. This only deals with the state declarations since the account was established. The first thing would be, if you counted up all of the counties and tribal lands that are shaded in, there would be 69 of our 87 counties, and the communities therein have benefited from this program. And 7 of the 11 tribal nations that are located in Minnesota have been recipients of state disaster assistance. Some are frequent flyers, with all due respect. Renville County, which quite frankly, incidentally, is where I grew up, has been the recipient 8 times, Cass County 7 times, Kitson County 6 times. So this account has been well used. As I said, there have been 52 state disaster declarations that governors have have issued since the account was established. The other thing, and it's, I know it's hard to see on the slide, I'm sure you can read it on your handouts, is that so far of the money that's been dispersed, as opposed to what's been transferred out, 90% of that money has gone to counties and communities in greater Minnesota. Of the 130 county levels that have been designated for disaster assistance, only seven times have declarations gone to the metro area counties, which is understandable because qualifying for this is based on a per capita financial threshold. And those counties, of course, in the metro area have large populations. It's more challenging for them. But that's I think instructive to take a look at how broadly this account has been used and has benefited communities across Minnesota. That 1,400 applicants that are currently working with us to receive disaster assistance under these accounts. And again, applicants are local jurisdictional jurisdictions and or their agencies, everything from police departments, highway departments, school districts, county boards, et cetera, tribal government. So 1,400 individual applicants that we're working with for both state and federal disaster assistance. The thing about the COVID disaster declaration that is of interest is that it's the first time in our nation's history that all 50 states, all tribal nations, as well as the District of Columbia and the territories and possessions have been included in a single disaster declaration issued by the president. Next slide, please, Katie. Just to finish up quick, and then we can get to your discussion, Mr. Chair, and the questions. $108 million have been appropriated into this account since 2014 when it was established. $104 million have been transferred out to provide assistance to Minnesota communities. And right now, the current unobligated balance of the account is right at, it's actually about $5,000 underneath the $4 million. And the projection for the Faribault County declaration, if it's so authorized by the governor, would take about $375,000 out. So probably the working balance on the back of the napkin is about $3.5 million currently in the account. Excuse me. Next slide, please, Katie. In the governor's budget that was released yesterday, you may have seen that he is recommending $15 million transfer for the current biennial budget to replenish the disaster account. Since the account was established, the program was created, it has provided assistance for on average one major federal disaster and 10 state disasters every year. In the last 3 years, we've averaged about $22 million of transfers and spending out of the account. So as we look at the remaining 6 months or now 5 months of the biennium, we're coming into spring flood season and the very disaster active parts of the year in the late spring and early summer. The governor thought it was appropriate and responsible to recommend $15 million to transfer into the account to make sure that the working funds are there for things that could happen between now and the 1st of July. As a reminder to members, this money does not expire. If it's not used, it simply rolls forward into the next fiscal period. That's where that kind of gas tank metaphor comes from. If we're not driving, we're not drawing it down, then it sits in the tank and it stays there until we need it. The governor also is recommending a $25 million transfer from the general fund for the first year of the 22-23 biennium. Again, our approach has been that we take a look at the account balance and the activity, flood forecasts, all those things, and make a recommendation each year. Mr. Chair, that concludes my remarks. And I stand for any questions.
Members, are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was looking for my hand button. I'm on my iPad, so forgive me. Commissioner Kelly, the governor made the decision to transfer funds out of this account to pay for the riots in Minneapolis. When we established this account initially, I've been a strong supporter of this. However, that was never an item that was discussed, to use these funds for arson, riots, et cetera. Could you explain a little bit the thought process that went in to deciding that these funds would be used for riots?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, of course. The first comment I would make is that the disaster assistance authorization was not for, quote, civil unrest. It was in response to the fires that were caused by the incident. And I'm not trying to parse the words there. The reason I say that is that in both the Stafford Act, which is the code that governs FEMA and federal disaster declarations, as well as Chapter 12B, which governs the state disaster assistance absent federal aid, the definition of a major disaster means any natural catastrophe, to your point, Representative Hamilton, or regardless of cause, any fire, flood, or explosion. So we, after the unfortunate tragic events of May and June, the cities and counties of in the core metro area asked us, they submitted some initial damage reports and asked us to ask FEMA to come to town to do a damage assessment and determine what could be eligible either for federal disaster assistance or state disaster assistance. FEMA did a joint federal, state, city, and county assessment with us. But as they always are, they are tough partners, and they very narrowly limited what they thought would be eligible for federal disaster assistance strictly to the damage caused by the fires set during the unrest. And it was only for damage to public infrastructure as well as public response costs, like removing the debris from the streets, but again, only in those areas that were affected by the fire. So there was no eligibility established for law enforcement costs like mutual aid or overtime, those types of things. They gave us a document, and I'm sorry for the bureaucracy, but we call it Table A, which is a document that verifies what FEMA, and in this case, FEMA Region 5 out of Chicago, what they have determined was eligible from an incident. And that amounted up to nearly $16 million, again, specifically relating only to damage caused by fires. As members know, the governor made a request of the president. It went through FEMA to the president, and the president declined the governor's request. I call to the attention of the members that even if you exceed a financial threshold, you qualify, that is not an automatic award of disaster assistance at the state or federal level for that matter. But the president declined it because it is at the law reads it's at the president's sole discretion whether he is going to authorize disaster assistance. We then followed our rights to appeal that back to FEMA and were once again denied. We made a very strong point of pointing out we weren't asking for a broad swath of the expenses related to the incident. We were only asking for the damage, the uninsured damage to public infrastructure caused by fire. That was turned down a second time, as members know. And with that second declination, if you go into Chapter 12B, it is one of the things that qualifies an event for state disaster assistance, that the expenses related to the incident are eligible under the law, and that the federal government has denied the request. So based on that and reading Chapter 12B as it's written and the companion in the Stafford Act, we made the recommendation to Governor Walz not to provide financial assistance for civil unrest, but for the damage caused by fires during the civil unrest.
Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Director Kelly. Mr. Chairman, here's my concern. The governor has, in his proposal here yesterday, a request of over, I believe it was $100 million to address the destruction in Minneapolis-St. Paul in the bonding bill. In the event a bonding bill is not passed on a timely basis, I'm afraid that this account could be drained immediately to go towards the destruction of the riots. Now, I'm not debating one way or the other pertaining to the riots. What I'm saying is when this account was originally established, and Director Kelly, you used the terminology when you were initially describing this too, as quote, natural disasters, unquote. And I think the argument here on whether or not it was a natural disaster, what took place in Minneapolis-St. Paul, the destruction was had. It is extremely expensive. And Mr. Chairman, this account can be drained very, very quickly if we allow that definition to be had to use these funds for the riots. And so that's the concern that I have, Mr. Chairman. Director Kelly, thank you for the explanation. And I'll end there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Director Kelly, do you want to respond? I've got a list of members who have questions.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I had to adjust something. Was that for me?
No, do you wish to respond to Representative Hamilton? If not, I've got a list of members who have questions.
The only thing I would say, Mr. Chair, thank you, and thank you, Representative Hamilton, is that I don't know that this account, there's anything that would be considered in the bonding bill that would be eligible for spending out of this account. That $16 million, which the state share is somewhere around $12 million, is really for that incident. The limit. I'm assuming that what's in the bonding bill is for, and in other funding proposals is for things that aren't eligible under disaster assistance. So I think the hit, if you will, Mr. Chair, to this account has taken place.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Director, for being with us today. You just touched on a bunch of the thoughts and questions that I had regarding the events in the Twin Cities this summer. So my one question and follow-up is, are we eligible to apply to the new administration on this same issue for another request?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bierman, we have asked that question at the request of the governor. And unfortunately, the answer is no. We got a response back in writing saying that, you know, there's no avenue for further appeal. There is nothing in the Code of Federal Regulations or in the Stafford Act that allows for a new application upon the change of administration. FEMA views this as being adjudicated, have being appealed, and in their second appeal letter, they are always very careful to say that the matter is considered closed. So unfortunately, the answer to that is no.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thought on this, or a question too for Director Kelly. Did the area look like a disaster to you?
Director Kelly.
After the events?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bierman, I would say yes. When you see buildings destroyed, debris in the streets, public buildings like libraries, like a library, a clinic, etc., destroyed, yes, it did look like the impact on the community looked like a disaster to me.
Representative Bierman.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Director Kelly. It looked like a disaster to me as well. And I know there's this division of people who want to parse what happened and how it happened and categorize it. But just a statement I would say is that, you know, disparities in social systems have historically created tensions, which lead to protest and conflict. And this has been happening since the beginning of time with human interaction. And I think that it is a very natural event. And the occurrence of such natural social disasters, or the lack thereof, is a measure of a people's success in peaceful self-governance. So we need to figure this out together and how we're going to move forward. Leaving this blight upon a central economic corridor of the Twin Cities is not a good idea. So I just wanted to make that one statement. And if I may ask one last question, please, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bierman.
On a different topic, some of the slides and presentation included data on money spent out of this account over the last 7 years, I believe. Would there be a way to check and have the trend of the weather-related disasters of, say, the last 20 years and the cost to Minnesota? And the reason I ask is billion-dollar disasters are having with recurring frequency and increasing for the country as a whole. And I think it would help this body to understand what the cost to Minnesota has been and the trend line of increasing costs for weather-related damages due to climate issues. So if that could be obtained, I think it would be helpful for the committee.
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bierman, we can certainly do that, because we do have the data. You know, we have maps and charts going back to the mid-1960s. So we'll be able to see how that has gone over. I can tell you that somewhat anecdotally that since the account was established, the incident and the dollar value associated with these qualifying events has gone up. Mr. Chair, you may recall, you know, I think originally we were looking at $6 to $8 million a year to be appropriated or transferred into the fund. And now, as I mentioned earlier, we're at $22 million a year over the last 3 years. But yes, we will put that information together for the committee.
Representative Bierman, we're going to be revisiting this, so we'll have that presentation at that time. And just as a reminder to the committee, Chapter 12A was created after the 2007 flooding in southeastern Minnesota, which is still the largest disaster in the history of this state. Our share of that disaster was $153 million in general fund money and $68 million in bonding money as a result of that disaster. Chapter 12A was created because we had no playbook. We had no idea how to handle a disaster of that scope. Subsequently, as I said at the beginning of the hearing, Chapter 12B was created in 2014 as a result of the 2012 Legislative Auditor's Report, that these things were coming at us so fast, and the local units of government, as you've seen so far, cannot sustain the amount of damage that's being done. So this will be an ongoing topic for us, Representative Bierman, and we'll be revisiting it. Next on my list, Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to save my question for another time if that's better. My question was actually along the line of Representative Bierman in a way, and my question was specifically around how accurate have our predictions been in terms of flooding or other natural disasters, given the wild weather patterns that we've seen? And if we're going to cover this in another committee, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to pass until that time.
Director Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sandstedt. The reaction I would give today is, and I'm not trying to be smart, it's about as predictable as the weather. That's why the governor, by the law, is required to make a budget recommendation every year, is to take a look at where the account is. You know, last year when we made the recommendation for a deficiency appropriation that was supported by the legislature, thank you, we were looking at the flood forecast for the springtime. So what is predictable, I think, is that we are on that upward plane, but the severity and the dollar amount of the damage is challenging to predict. And I would tell you that the federal government and FEMA struggles with this every year. And I appreciate the comment. I think it was Representative Bierman about the billion-dollar disasters. I off the top of my head, I want to say we had 17 billion dollar or more disasters, billion per incident in the United States in 2020. So it makes it very challenging. But we look forward to having that discussion. Along with Mr. Chair, if I would suggest, Minnesota since 2009 has had an interagency climate adaptation team that's trying to understand what's going on with trends in the weather and so forth.
Representative Sanchez.
No, thanks. I'm done.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate this conversation, but part of me, what troubles me is the fact that we're having a conversation and considering excluding resources, disaster resources, to an area that we know has historically had policies put in place that have caused some of the disparities, that some of the deepest disparities that we have in the state. And I thank you, Representative Bierman, for pointing out, you know, the social aspect of this, which is some of our own doing. And we must as a state, we must as a legislation, take care of our communities. I couldn't fathom the thought of not supplying disaster relief to greater Minnesota when a tornado comes down, a major snowstorm has an impact on those communities. I couldn't fathom the thought of that. And I don't think that we'd be having a conversation if this was a situation that happened in greater Minnesota in some of those communities, that we'd be looking at finding ways to exclude providing resources to repair those disasters. I did tour, I walked through some of the areas where the damage was done, and it absolutely, I can confirm what Director Kelly said, it absolutely looked like a disaster. Buildings were burned to the ground, they were still smoldering. When I was there, I helped clean up some areas in those places, and it absolutely looked like a disaster. It didn't look like anything we should see in our particular communities or in the U.S., you know, based on what we see around the world when these things happen. But I can absolutely say we should not be having or entertaining conversations that would exclude providing resources to rebuild these communities better than they were before that, because we've absolutely had policies that have caused these things to happen. And if we continue to govern in a way that will be exclusionary, we'll have these things happen again. So I could not absolutely support anything that would want to exclude resources going to these communities to help them build back better than the way they were before. That wasn't really a question, but I need to make that statement. Thank you, Chair.
No, Representative Frazier, I didn't think it was, and I'll respond. That's one reason why we've started this hearing early in the session, and it'll be an ongoing discussion. We're going to continue this discussion also with Senate File 7, which is in your packets today, and then we'll have that discussion as we move forward. Representative Frazier, do you have anything else, or should I move to the next rep?
You can move forward, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, Dr. Director Kelly. There's an attachment in our packet today that talks about the number of state disaster declarations since 2014 to 2020. And it shows most of the money went to greater Minnesota. A smaller portion of it went to the 7-county metro area where I sit. And as we sit here and talk about, you know, I saw House File or Senate File 7, which would exclude civil unrest. And I can't help but to be shocked by that. Because when there things happen in greater Minnesota, which if you look at the proportion of money, it's 90% of the money is going to greater Minnesota. The business owners in the area that were burned down, that had like that were destroyed, they didn't ask for this to happen. We don't ask if climate, you know, we are seeing more natural disasters. We're talking about state disasters, but more natural disasters. And it's because of climate change. Like, let's be honest here. So I think that we all are one state, and it's really disheartening to see what is worthy and what is not worthy when it's a state disaster. So again, like Representative Frazier, not really a question, just a little frustration in what I'm hearing.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly the area was a disaster. I visited it as well, but I would disagree with the comment that was stated that it is a very natural event. It was not a natural event. Perhaps the gentleman that stated that didn't mean it particularly, but nevertheless, he said that it was a very natural event. It certainly wasn't. It was a disaster indeed. And from what I hear from reports that it could have been stopped a little bit sooner. But be that as it may, I think it was necessary that we help out financially to some of the public infrastructure, for sure. I do have a question for Director Kelly. You stated that in some of the infrastructure was uninsured infrastructure. Many cities are insured by the League of Minnesota Cities. So I'm just curious as to what areas that dollars amount went to help rebuild in the burning, what infrastructure was not covered by insurance?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, if I may, I'll give you both what were covered by insurance and which were not. There were a number of Hennepin County facilities, a library, a clinic, human services center that were insured, and they what's eligible under the disaster programs is their deductible. So they had a $1 million deductible. So $1 million of the is what Hennepin County for their facilities is eligible. The primary facility in the city of Minneapolis, which was uninsured, is the Third Precinct building, which I think members know was destroyed. So it does illustrate the importance of insurance. I would tell you that the federal government, as well as within our own program, we always evaluate insurance to verify whether a facility is insured or uninsured. The way the federal government handles it, and we view it the same, is we'll just use the example of the Third Precinct. That building was uninsured by a formal policy. If the state participates financially in the rebuilding of it, the city will be required to insure that facility, or it would be ineligible for assistance for any future events. So the Third Precinct was uninsured. Some of the Hennepin County facilities were.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, Director Kelly, that's a little disturbing that the Third Precinct was uninsured. Do you know what the circumstances would be that it was not insured?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I do not. That would be a question for the administration in Minneapolis to answer their approach to insurance. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Then just a last question regarding the fires. Medillia had their downtown had a fire many years ago, and I recall seeing some tax bills come in for some tax exemptions for the rebuilding. I don't know the circumstances of what started that fire, whether it was natural or short or what the circumstances were, but could it be possible that other areas in our state caused with the downtown being destroyed by fires, that this fund could be used to help rebuild in some of the towns, since it was already used for fires in Minneapolis?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, thank you for that question. The explosion and resulting fire in Medillia was caused by infrastructure failure, a gas main leak, if you will, to overly simplify it. The predominance of the damage was done to private property, the storefronts and buildings along the main street, and those are never eligible for state or federal disaster assistance. There were some costs that were eligible for the city of Medillia, and if my geography serves me correct, Watonwan County, but it weren't in the cost of responding to the fires, but those were not high enough to trigger state disaster assistance, as well as any repairs they made to the street. The state government, as I recall, did step in with some financial assistance for business owners, providing property tax relief, low interest loans, et cetera, which is similar to what often happens in federal declarations with the Small Business Administration and others. The primary difference there, and members might recall also Melrose had an explosion and a fire. Those facilities were private property, which are not covered by these by FEMA or by the state disaster program.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Director Kelly. I just had one more question I just thought of, just in regards to the third precinct. And again, I think that folks would agree that helping rebuild some of the infrastructure is possibly adequate and appropriate. But my understanding is they're not going to rebuild the third precinct. Is that true or false? And if not, then why the large amount of the funding for that area in regards to the third precinct?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, it is our assumption that they are going to rebuild the third precinct. If they don't, they won't be eligible for reimbursement. And again, this is a reimbursement program. It's not like an insurance policy where they get a grant of money commensurate. It's for the repair and or probably in this case, replacement of that critical infrastructure. I don't know what their current plans are specifically, but we've been told they are going to find a permanent home for the third precinct. They have moved them out of the convention center, the Minneapolis Convention Center, and into another city-owned facility called the City of Lakes Building. But everything that I have heard from the city is that they do plan to find a new building, whether they build one or occupy something else for the third precinct. But again, they will not be reimbursed for any of those costs until the city incurs them to replace that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. No, that's my last question, as I stated, so I appreciate it, Mr. Chair and Director Kelly.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here, Director Kelly. I just want to address, given the fact that in 1A, District 1A, where I'm at, and Kitson County is, if I understand you correctly, Director Kelly, you said six times Kitson County has been involved with disaster assistance. I just want to speak to that, knowing that in the case in Kitson County or in any of the rural counties where I live, natural disasters are defined a bit differently. And I, with all respect to what Representative Edelson and Representative Frazier brought up, and not to dismiss the fact that there definitely was issues, and of course, burnt out buildings anywhere would look like a disaster. But I think just to speak for the folks back up in District 1A, their definition of a natural disaster would look entirely different. And the fact that it took so long for the governor and the mayor in Minneapolis to respond to the events there, I think that's the question they have in my area. And that's their frustration with paying for that disaster. So I just want to speak up to that point. I think I'm going to get a lot of calls on why we're spending money on the disaster assistance in Minneapolis. But I completely understand your frustrations as everyone watched, including our governor and mayor, watched the city burn to the ground. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Director Kelly, it might be a good idea at this point to sum up just exactly how much was taken out of the disaster account and where that money went to in Hennepin County. We had this discussion last week, you and I, so it isn't a new one, but it might be one. Director Kelly.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could just make one quick response for Representative Burkle.
Yes, go ahead, Director Kelly.
I mentioned that Kitson County has been the recipient of state disaster assistance six times. It's been the recipient of disaster assistance, both state and federal, 34 times since 1965, and for obvious reasons, Representative, with the Red River being the most dominant threat up there. The other thing I would say is that when I made my recommendation to the governor and when the governor authorized disaster assistance, we did not refer to this as a natural disaster. The fires in Minneapolis. When I read the definition of a major disaster up front, it was a natural catastrophe or regardless of cause, damage caused by flood, fire, et cetera. So I just want to be clear that none of us, at least from my position as the state's emergency management director, I'm not referring to this as a natural disaster. It's one of those ors. Just like in the case that Representative McDonald answered, if that had been public infrastructure, if City Hall had been destroyed in Medelia, that would have been eligible for disaster assistance, but it wouldn't have been a natural disaster. It would have been a technological failure. It would have been an explosion, regardless of cause. Mr. Chair, back to your question, the assessed damage that FEMA cataloged and that we participated in was about $15.6 million. Doing the math and applying the 75% rule and a little extra for the administrative costs of administering that assistance, it's about $12 million, just a little over $12 million. I think it's $12,004,000 that has been transferred out of the contingency account into a separate, you know, I always give the metaphor of the big bucket, little bucket. The disaster account is a big bucket. We take money out, like this $12 million goes into a smaller bucket for the city of Minneapolis, and then we draw out of that sub-account, if you will, that sub-appropriation to pay them when they provide the documentation. But the bottom line is it's about $12 million was transferred out of the disaster assistance contingency account for the city of Minneapolis and Hennepin County.
Director Kelly, can you be a little bit more specific as to where the money went? Because in our discussion, and I don't think it's come up here exactly where all of that money went to, it wasn't all into construction.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. If I can find it quickly, I will do that. A lot of it was for the facilities damage. About almost $1 million was for debris removal, again in the areas of the fires. About $100,000 to emergency response costs, again extraordinary costs beyond their normal operating, only for the fires. And then there was some equipment damage, and it's primarily in street lights, traffic semaphores, etc. And then the balance was in the buildings, with $13 million of that eligible damage being attributed to buildings in Minneapolis and $1 million to Hennepin County. So does that answer your question, Mr. Chair?
Director Kelly, that would answer it. I don't see any other questions from the committee, and I know the committee has been monitoring Senate File 7, which is in your packet. So if the committee would take a look at Senate File 7, and the reason why it's in your packet, of course, is because it is part of this discussion. I have had numerous discussions with Senator Rosen. There was a hearing yesterday in the Senate on Senate File 7. I've also discussed the bill with Director Kelly, so Director Kelly knows the question that's coming. Director Kelly, should Senate File 7 be enacted into law? Can you tell me the impact that Senate File 7 would have across our disaster accounts and what it might limit if we pass this into law?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Without addressing the retroactive date that's currently included, I think the effect of that is obvious to the members. But looking forward and going forward, it certainly would limit the availability of this form of disaster assistance to any community that specifically suffered damage from fire or explosion that was related to civil unrest. That's the short answer. I would also then just highlight that the legislature be cautious as they look at the interaction between civil unrest and the damage caused by fires or explosions. Because no one is, I don't think, it's not in the definition of a disaster that's civil unrest. It is that the causes, that is a cause that would no longer be eligible. I think Director Eric Waage from Hennepin County made a very interesting observation during the hearing in the other body earlier in the week. And he said that it could imperil the eligibility for federal disaster assistance in the event of a future incident of civil unrest that had damage like Minneapolis had, caused by fires or explosions. In that, if the federal government saw that the state excludes civil unrest being the triggering event for damage, then the federal government might be very uninterested and might say that we have made it ineligible, those damages ineligible for federal disaster assistance. You know, a lot of times we describe this upside down. You know, if it's big enough, the federal government will come and help us. If they don't help us, then we have this program in the state to help ourselves. The federal government looks at it conversely. They look at if state and local communities have done what they can to deal with the impacts of incidents regardless, and it's beyond their capacity, then it comes to the state. So as those things roll up, they would very much consider that the state considered damage triggered by civil unrest is ineligible for state assistance. That could very well affect the eligibility for federal assistance if we got if in a future request there was a president that approved it. It's been a long time since that's been approved. You have to go back to the 1991-92 LA riots when a president did authorize disastrous for damage caused by civil unrest. So it gets tricky.
Director Kelly and members of the committee, Senate File 7, Representative Pawlowski will be introducing tomorrow the House file companion to it. So we will be in possession of the bill. I intend to have more hearings as we proceed on the companion to Senate File 7 and also on the disaster aid account. As you've seen, it's a critical account. We definitely need to have it in place when we're not in session. But now we have another issue that has come before us, and I assume that issue will also be discussed in other committees. So members, does anyone else have any questions on anything today? Representative Bierman, did you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, so Director Kelly, with what you just said, with this Senate File 7, in my district this summer, we had some people from out of town come in and firebomb the courthouse. So if this bill passes, that would mean that we would not be able to receive disaster funds from this fund. And then my follow-up question is, how does that affect the reports and the cases whereby members from, I know, Gull Lake and Texas and Colorado have been into Minnesota to do firebombing during the events this summer? How does that play into this Senate file?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bierman, thanks for that question. I think the issue that your question raises is what is the definition of civil unrest within the statute? And that there was some discussion, and like I said, in the other body earlier in the week, and it was something, an area that I have concern of, because if we look at future events, we are going to be asked to evaluate whether things are eligible or not. So there would need to be a strong definition of civil unrest in order to for us to properly manage that. I don't know the impact it would be for legal minds to determine the full impact of that, and whether an event and whether where people come from and what they did and how many of them, all that would fall into someone making the determination if an act or an event were civil unrest or not. So I do urge some thoughtfulness, I guess, that definition is fully developed as this matter goes forward.
Representative Bierman.
No, Mr. Chair, no further questions. Thank you for the answer, Director Kelly.
Anyone else have any further questions on this or other material presented today? Seeing none, Representative Hamilton. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to follow up, I really appreciated the discussion around this today. And when we're talking about civil unrest, I think this is why, when events like this happen, the legislature should be brought back to discuss this, because then we can address the underlying meaning as well. And again, when I was talking about my initial comments about what would qualify for this account, typically, when this was originally set up, we were talking about at least my perspective, my definition, was natural disasters. There's a whole lot that went into what took place in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And in the event, issues like that are eligible for this account to where it is automatically paid for versus us coming in and discussing what took place, what was behind all that civil unrest, and therefore what additional policies may or may not need to be addressed moving forward. I think that merits response, or that merits a discussion here at the legislature. And so that's the gist of my comments there, I guess, and concerns on why this should maintain, I believe, a natural disaster type of an account so that we can have further discussions on this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative or Director Kelly, do you wish to respond?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, yes, only from that, as we look at the events, catastrophic events across the country, around the world, there are the potential for things that aren't categorically natural disasters. And Representative McDonald brought up the Medelia explosion, or just other events that could be triggered by technological failures, human error. It's clear that in Minnesota, almost all of this money has been spent on natural disasters, with this one very obviously prominent exception. But I would urge caution about, without regard to the civil unrest issue, but I would urge caution of exclusively having the account only for natural disasters when in a very complex technological world that we live in, with the reliance on information technology to control major infrastructure, and just the potential for things to go wrong without being a natural disaster, that this account would still be made available for other events. And again, I say that without regard to the civil unrest issue.
Representative Hamilton.
No further comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm glad we'll be having this conversation. I just want us also to think about the economic impact of us not considering this a disaster. Edina is just a few miles away from where this took place. If we start to disenfranchise different communities and don't actually look at what an evolving disaster is, we're going to have a really hurt state. So I do hope that we continue to have this conversation. Many of us will be impacted.
Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I agree with your last statements, Mr. Kelly. A natural disaster would not be considered, I suppose, if our infrastructure of electronic communication or broadband were somehow impacted by civil unrest. If we aren't going to consider civil unrest as a qualification of a disaster, then it seems to me we have to consider additional legislation which would directly support a response to civil unrest. And that would include, the result of protest, demonstration, and riot. And it would also include destruction or incapacitation of our electronic communications. That's my only comment, I guess.
Director Kelly, Representative Sandel brings up a question that you and I discussed also last week. I had heard that the governor was going to request the creation of a public safety account. Did he formally do that in his budget? And if he did, the parameters of it would not be in this committee, would obviously be in another committee. How much did he request for that account, if he has formally incorporated it into his budget?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe, and I apologize, I haven't fully reviewed the entire account. I would say, if my memory serves me, it's approximately $35 million in an account that is quite separate from Chapter 12. It would be under Chapter 299A, I believe, which is in the law enforcement part of the Department of Public Safety. And I appreciate that it's there because it is intended, I think, on the part of the governor to provide financial assistance for jurisdictions that provide mutual aid and some of the other things, but it's in a separate account specifically because it's not eligible for disaster assistance. But I believe the number is $35 million, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Director Kelly. And Representative Sandell, you raised a good point, and it won't be discussed in this committee, but I'm sure it's going to be discussed in another committee. So hopefully that account might take the stress off the account that we've been discussing today, should that account be enacted into law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the committee? I don't see any hands up on the screen, but members, we're going to be returning to this discussion probably a couple of different times during session. So thank you today. I think when we have 10 out of 13 members contributing to the discussion, it certainly is a point that we will be revisiting. So if there is no more discussion from the committee, Director Kelly, thank you, and meeting is adjourned.